Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
Welcome back again as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science nanotechnology. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online and webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz. An exciting show today. In the first half hour, we've got Gregory T. Sullivan. He's the principal research scientist at BAE Systems, and he says we can secure our computers. We don't have to throw out the internet and rebuild it. He said if you want to enforce some sort of security policy on our machines, the security policy has to be explained to the machine, and then the machine can do it on its own. Pretty exciting. He also warns that the hackers are even hacking our antivirus tools and using them against us. And we're going to visit our dentist strangers, our fountain of useless information. Of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But right now, let's get right on to today's guest.
Stand by.
Right now, we're lucky to have with us Greg Sullivan. He's the principal research scientist at BAE Systems. And we talk in this program a lot about how we're fighting a cyber war and how dangerous it is. And every computer, every operating system in use today, from our cars and our banks and hospitals, hopelessly vulnerable to attackers. And there's been so much talk about scrapping the internet altogether and rebuilding it. Greg has been working on some other ideas. The Crash Safe Project, it's a research project with BAE. And he's been kind enough to come on the program and tell us a little bit about it. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Thanks, Colonel. Glad to be here.
Now, you don't think that the internet and everything is hopelessly flawed, and we're in a dangerous situation. I know you believe that, but you don't think, as others, that it needs to be scrapped altogether and rebuilt from the beginning. You think that we can make our equipment, our personal equipment, safer. Is that where you're going with this?
No, I pretty much do think that over time, at least, the basic components of the internet and the computers we use do need to be replaced, because the architectures that our computers, everything from our laptops to our cell phones, all that stuff is the same basic architecture as we've been using for 40 years, and it was laid down and created before the internet even existed and before there were cyber attacks and worries about security. So now it's unreasonable to expect everybody to throw away their current computers and buy new ones, especially since the new ones like that we're working on don't really exist yet. So there'll be a long period of time where there'll probably be a mix, right? Some more secure computers, such as the ones we're designing, talking, interacting with the, as you said, hopelessly vulnerable computers that we all rely on every day.
All right. Well, now this is part of the Crash Safe Project that you're working on, and you're going to have to help me out with this, because I really do not understand how we're going to be able to make our equipment safer. Give us the basics.
Well, I mean, even the word safe, like make our computer safer, means different things to different people. And it might mean in your case that you don't want your credit card information splatted out over the internet in plain text. In a medical machine, it might mean that you don't want somebody to be able to hack in and change the dosage of some pump. But the point is that safe itself, what it means for your computer or your application to not mess up, to not be unsafe, needs to be defined. And then the computer needs to know about it, and then the computer needs to be able to enforce it. So right now, computers are really, really good at number crunching. They can do massive amounts of floating point number computations per second. It's all very impressive.
Sure.
They can play chess, and so forth. but the computer doesn't know your social security number from the instructions to load an insulin pump, from the instructions to launch a missile. So, right, we often refer to computers today as processors of raw seething bits. That is, the computer just does what it's told, and all it ever sees is instructions and binary data. And there's no way for the computer, there's nothing in the runtime of a current computer system where some software in the computer could say, wait a minute, this isn't correct, or this program is accessing data it shouldn't. So really the main thing at the base level that we need to add to computing systems is a notion of security. And it's very, very hard to patch that in after the fact. So we've been trying, all the major companies, lots of research efforts have been trying to patch in on the existing platforms, Intel and Windows and Linux and so forth, security. So they try to check for viruses, they try to check for anomalies, they try to check for buffer overflows and so forth.
Yeah.
The problem is for every patch that they make, an attacker can surprisingly easily get around it. And that's because these computers fundamentally at the base level are wide open to attack. There's no built-in protection. So in the end, what we're proposing is a computer system where even at the hardware level, there's space at every instruction and on every word to specify the security requirements for that data and for those instructions. And it's almost like adding a second computer to your current computer. So and tying them together so you can't run one without the other. So the first computer is this number crunching machine that we all currently have on our desks. And the other computer, which is really on the same chip and operating on the same words of data, is busy checking that the rules, security policies, are being enforced at every instruction. So, at a gross level, that's what we're proposing, that computers can't enforce security policies that they don't know about. And furthermore, when we try to add the security policies in on the current computers, the software that enforces the security policy is just as vulnerable as the software it's trying to protect. So it's still open, a field day for attackers nowadays.
Okay, and that's why we're so vulnerable, I guess. What in essence sounds like you're trying to do is teach our computers to reason. I mean, is that kind of it, isn't it?
Yeah, or at least to give first class status to data, metadata, really, what we call, So you've got your social security number, that's data, you've got the Michelin's codes, that's data, whatever. And what you really want is for all of those pieces of data, you want a certain amount of metadata. You want to say, this social security number is private to Colonel Mason, or you are giving authority to look at that to Amazon.com, but that you want that metadata to be tied. You want the access restrictions to be tied to that social security number and stay tied to that social security number no matter where it goes. And right now, there's no real mechanism to do that. And so, yeah, you need two things. You need the computer needs to be able to reason about security and do the checks at every moment. But it also needs the security metadata to go around with the data. So it needs information about the data. Where did it come from? Where is it allowed to go? And it needs to know what are the security policies in place for you, for your computer, for your insulin pump, for your car, whatever. So it needs those two things to be available. And, of course, that's what we sometimes call the root of trust. So if the attackers can change the security policy, then we're in trouble, right? So you want the security policy, the rules that govern who can do what to what data, to be protected, preferably by the hardware, and then you're going to start with a much higher degree of trust than you have currently on today's computer systems, where the hardware really doesn't do anything except for crunch numbers. and everything else is left to software. And bottom line is, it's extremely hard to get software right.
Yeah.
So that's where we are today. We're trying. The program manager of the DARPA program, CRASH, that funds the SAFE project, his name is Howie Schrobe, and he talks about what he calls P4, which is the current, how he characterizes the current state of cybersecurity, which is perimeter protection, patch, and prey. So the idea is we try to put a lot of, like a fortress around our computers with firewalls, and we find out that that doesn't work. So every day there's more violations found, more attacks found, and then we patch our software, we try to fix all the problems, then we pray, and then next day we repeat the cycle. And it's quite obvious, it seems to many people, that cycle isn't going to get any better. It's not like we know that there's, you know, 100 bugs left, and as soon as we fix those 100 bugs, then we'll be safe and secure, and the world will be a better place. In fact, it seems like for every patch to address one vulnerability, two more attacks take place. So it seems somehow almost counterintuitively, unless you've tried to program complex software systems, like it's getting worse, that the software is getting more and more buggy. And in fact, you know, some of the most worrying attacks are on the security software itself. So if, I don't know if you or anybody listening uses, antivirus and
oh, sure.
Not to call any
yeah.
particular out, but, you know, we have on some of our computers here, McAfee's mm-hmm. products, and the same goes for Norton and all these. Those programs are entrusted with a lot of authority to look at all of the files and all the traffic on our computers and determine whether something should be allowed or not.
Okay.
Well, guess what? Those are extremely large, complex, bug-ridden piles of software, just like the rest of the stuff on our machines. And when the attackers get into the antivirus software on your machine, then, you know, you're in trouble. And there have been many cases of that already. So the current regime, the current attempt to say, okay, we have these big, lots and lots of millions and millions of lines of software on our machines, and we're going to put millions and millions of lines of more software that tries to fix the software that's already there, I think people are rapidly coming to the conclusion that that's just not working out.
Wow, that's a scary scenario. I mean, I use Komodo, and our own virus protection gets to be compromised, and then we have a real problem because they're there to protect us, and then they can be turned on us almost like the bulldog turning around and biting its owner. But this sounds like such a complicated thing. I mean, you're talking about a platform within a platform that is going to go ahead and make sure that the stuff is secure. In all these little spaces in between the regular data, and it just sounds phenomenally complicated. But you say you're having success with this at the lab there at BAE Systems?
Yeah, and I should give credit to our partners too. We're working with really top-notch academic research groups at University of Pennsylvania, Harvard, and Northeastern.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's funny. A lot of the basic protections that effectively deal with most attacks now, we have known how to do for quite a long time, and a lot of the reason that computers today don't have these very basic protections is it's a complicated matter of faster, cheaper, smaller being the dominant regime.
Sure.
People desperately wanting a backwards compatibility, thinking that what they want is a lot, you know, more CPU cycles, more megahertz, gigahertz.
Mm-hmm.
But for starters, on the SAFE platform that we're designing, we have at the hardware level, there's two very simple mechanisms that we didn't invent, that have been around for a while, but we have the luxury of designing some hardware from scratch. And so we started out by putting in these two basic mechanisms. And one is called fat pointers. And recently we've slimmed them down, so we actually call them low-fat pointers, but that's kind of an inside nerd joke.
Yeah.
And the idea is that when you look at your software, your Windows operating system, Microsoft Word, Linux, whatever, it's dealing with memory. So it's allocating data from your computer's memory, and it's putting data in that memory, and then it's reading that data. And if you read anything about software security attacks, you'll run into the phrase buffer overflow,
mm-hmm.
and binary code injection.
Sure.
So these are pervasive flaws in current software, and what happens is the attacker is able to get their code onto your machine by using a so-called buffer overflow, and that is they will give data to your program, to some program on your machine like a web browser or something, that it wasn't expecting, and what happens is the memory that your program was expecting to fill with okay data is swamped by the attacker, and the attacker overflows your the memory in your application and uses that to inject their own code. So that's called buffer overflow. Now it turns out this simple idea of fat pointers means that every pointer to memory in your computer has a little metadata with it. So this is not true currently, but on a safe machine, every pointer has a little bit of metadata in it, and that metadata is simply keeping track of the base and bounds of the set of the array in memory to which the pointer points.
Okay.
So this is kind of a low-level detail, but it rules out this very large class of attacks called buffer overflow. So it's really a very simple mechanism. I mean, what we do is by very clever encoding, we're able to not actually use up any more space for these memory pointers. But at every point in the safe machine where a program says, please write the following data to the memory pointed at by this pointer, the safe machine does a check. This is something that's not done in conventional machines, but it does a quick check to say, is this the data that I want to write going to fit in the memory pointed to by this pointer? And if it's not going to fit, it does not do the write.
Oh.
So that rules out this basic class of attacks called buffer overflows. So this is just one example, but it's an example basically, it's consistent with what we do across the board on the safe machine design. That is, we trade silicone for security is one of our bumper sticker mottos.
Uh-huh.
So what we do is we do a little bit more processing. We add in this check.
Okay.
And we're able to do that processing, that extra checking in parallel.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't cost you time. It costs you silicone, that is logic and gates in the computer.
Yeah.
You have to, so your computer chip is not entirely dedicated to floating point operations and doing math faster.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it is dedicated to doing this sort of runtime checking of security metadata, such as at the very lowest level of this idea of, is your pointer, are you respecting your pointer bounds? So
mm-hmm.
that's a very low-level example, but it's an example of how, in general, on the safe platform, we decide, hey, if we can spend a little bit of silicone, a little bit of computer chip logic checking security, we will do that as long as we don't slow down the machine. So we really try to make it a trade silicone or chip area or whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. trade silicone for security.
Right.
So, yeah, you'll spend a little bit more for your chips, right? The chips will, if you think about your chip as doing a bunch of operations on the safe chip, it'll do the normal operations and it will always do some additional operations to check your basic security properties. So you're paying for a little bit more silicone, a few more gates, but you're getting hugely increased security. So the other low-level hardware mechanism, I mentioned that there were two very low-level hardware
yeah.
mechanisms. The
yeah.
other one is every word on a safe machine is also has, actually has two kinds of metadata, but the lowest level kind is basically says, for every word on the machine, is it a pointer, an integer, a floating point number, an instruction, and several other things. And when you try to run an instruction like add these two numbers together, if they're not both numbers, like one's a pointer, mm-hmm. it won't do it.
Okay.
Or if you say, please execute the instruction at this word, at this memory address, if it's not an instruction, if it's an integer, let's say, it won't do it. Now, this seems incredibly obvious and basic, I would think, to people who are not that familiar with computer architecture. It's like, of course, why wouldn't you do that sort of checking? But in fact, another common case of attacks in conventional systems is called binary code injection. The attacker can splat a whole bunch of words onto your machine, possibly using buffer overflow,
mm-hmm.
and those words are just numbers. They're just ones and zeros. But the attacker can convince your computer to start executing those ones and zeros as if they were instructions. And that's a root cause for lots and lots of attacks on machines today. And the safe machine, by doing this very simple checking, both of pointer bounds, but also of the types of data that it's being told to execute, rules out all those attacks. And to your average listener, I would think they would think, well, why aren't all chips doing that? And, you know, it's a reasonably good question.
Sure.
But the basic answer is that takes more silicone, so it costs more to produce those chips, mm-hmm. not a lot more, but a little bit more, and it's not necessarily backwards compatible with the massive pile of software that we currently rely on.
Oh,
so
yeah.
The big cost for adopting these architectures like SAFE is probably going to be having to rewrite a lot of software to, or at least recompile a lot of software to run on these new chips. And that's a cost that so far the industry hasn't been willing to make. But we're trying to make that argument that it's worth it.
Well, you seem to be making a great argument about it being worth it. I would think government, too, would be the first. I mean, we're always concerned that we're being hacked and that it's going to shut down our electrical grid or it's going to make our cars speed up. I mean, we actually had an experience recently, if you remember, the Stuxnet worm that got into the Siemens computers that were overrunning the nuclear project in Iran. And, of course, there's whispers that that America and Israel were behind it, but there's been no solid proof that that's the case. But I would think the governments would be interested immediately as far as Homeland Security goes. I guess that's why you're speaking at the Homeland Security Technology Conference in Boston. But also industry has to protect itself from these massive incursions into looting our industrial secrets. So right now we got a break at the half hour, and then when we come back, I'm going to want to know, you know, what you can tell us about that, and maybe explore a little bit about the Stuxnet worm and that sort of thing. So, okay, everybody, stick around. We'll be right back. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. In the Den of Strangers, will we meet today?
Clint Murchison. Money is like manure. if you spread it around, it does a lot of good. But if you pile it up in one place, well, it stinks like hell.